Welcome to Alphabet Scoop, episode 108. We are in the middle of the week. We're recording slightly earlier, but it is the perfect day to discuss everything that Stadia announced this week. And I guess we have to start it off last week with Cyberpunk 2077. Kyle, how many hours have you played exactly?
You want to know the exact number, all right? You're about to be blown away by this number, okay? I hope you're ready for this, because I haven't checked it, actually. But let me tell you, I am at a whopping 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Yeah, I am curious how many hours Damien played, because you should watch his video, his night of video, since he's based in London, of Cyberpunk 2077 running on Stadia, and it performs well, actually, as the launch of the game has commenced over the weekend. We have seen overwhelmingly that Stadia is the best place to play in comparison to the last gen consoles. And how's this generation of consoles doing, actually, with Cyberpunk?
This generation's consoles are doing all right, but the thing is that they haven't been updated with the quote-unquote next-gen patch yet. Mm-hmm. So it's not the final experience yet, so the graphics are probably going to get way better. And but yeah, I mean, the game's a buggy mess everywhere you go, though, so...
Yeah, I think it was yesterday, right, Ben? They released the latest patch for it.
They released the latest patch on Stadia. That was actually a few days late. It came out, I think, on Thursday for PC and PlayStation, and then like the following day for Xbox.
Which is a crazy delay, because they said they were treating Stadia like another PC build.
I'm guessing part of that had to do with the weekend, but who's to say?
Yeah, so I think, again, Ben, as you wrote, this was Stadia's proving ground, and the demand has absolutely, from what we can, as best as we can tell, how many people are now interested in Stadia, it's getting up there.
Yeah, it's been kind of a turning point. You know, before it was no one really cared except for the people who are actually using it, and now a lot more people are interested in it. In fact, it's caused a spike on Google Trends, which I was looking at, and you know, they had the promotion that had the free Premiere bundle with the controller and the Chromecast, and they had to axe that a few days early because it was overwhelming demand. And then it probably also contributed to the Stadia outage, the first real Stadia outage the other day. But yeah, it's been a huge demand, and it's really given Stadia a chance to prove itself.
Yeah,
it's handled it pretty well.
Go on.
I have some theories about that outage, to be honest with you. I feel like it's still related to accounts or to cloud save or something. Like, I feel like, for example, Destiny 2, during the outage, would load. You would get to the character select screen. You'd have your three characters. And as soon as you choose one, it would crash.
You know, it was weird.
Where Cyberpunk, it stopped at the splash screen, which is where I think it loads information from the servers.
Yeah, it was weird. When I tried to load up Risk of Rain, because that was the last game I had played. And it loaded, but it was mind-blowingly slow. So I don't know. Yeah, it was weird. If it had just been Cyberpunk, I would have said that they messed up something with the update, because it happened like 10 minutes after they released the update. But it just seems like that was ironic timing. Yeah, it's a weird outage, but it was also like the first real outage in a year.
Stadia specific, anyway.
Yeah. To go back to one thing you said, so Google had this promotion. If you pre-ordered Cyberpunk 2077, you would get a code for a Stadia Premiere Edition from the Google Store. It's just to recap, that's usually $99, and you get a Stadia controller and a Chromecast Ultra to play on the big screen. So, like you were saying, they cut the promotion early. And honestly, that they should have not done that. They should have kept it up and swallowed whatever cost was associated with offering free $99 bundles to just keep up the sales. It's
oh, absolutely.
They had such a good thing running into the weekend.
I wish I could peek behind the scenes because I really wonder how many they gave away in this Cyberpunk promotion versus how many they gave away in that YouTube Premium promotion. Because this is obviously the more profitable long term. This was a Stadia investment where the YouTube Premium promotion felt like a Stadia throwaway almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, the timing is, I don't know, mate. They're still on sale, right? It's the I'm
the
checking
bundle itself. It should be
yes, should still be on sale.
On sale as in holiday sale.
Yeah, they're also doing a holiday sale. So yes, they still have stock. I know it's a shame how again.
Oh no, it's over now. It was
yeah, the holiday sale's over apparently, but still available to purchase at least.
Yeah. Mm, okay. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's that. They have the stock. It's not that they it's far beat.
I do kind of wonder though if they did it to kind of pace the demand, because they do only have probably a limited number of Chromecast Ultras.
Mm. And they need to get it into next year.
Yeah, like let's say it runs out in it ran out in January because they kept the promotion going. That's potentially a few months with no way to sell people a new way to do it on the TV without either restarting production on the Ultra or really fast tracking the Android TV support, which would either be really good or really, really bad.
Right. But at the same time, that what they really should have done is just not done that YouTube promotion. Because if they had just saved all of that YouTube stock and used it for this, it would still be going into next week.
Absolutely.
I don't know. The YouTube promotion did do a lot to get people's attention.
That's true. It's just not free.
Yeah, it's people have free stuff with a at max $12 subscription, monthly subscription. But well, I think Kyle, you were making the point earlier that Google is in this promotion they're attracting people that definitely want the game versus a more casual audience that likes free things with their YouTube Premium promotion. So there is as you were making the case, it's they're doing it for the, that's an investment to encourage people to stay on the service to decide to want to get this free bundle. You have to pay for Cyberpunk, and at that point you're already in the door, and anything that comes further is just keeping you a fan for longer.
Where the other promotion ended up being this thing where people got a free Chromecast and sold their Stadia controller on YouTube or on eBay.
Yeah,
on
eBay.
Sold it on YouTube. That 2 years from now, you'll be selling it on YouTube. No problem. No.
Yeah. Damien, he made the point that in eBay UK that people were just reselling the Premier bundles, and that was a
because
good
it was
way to get a good deal. So maybe if you're on the your stateside and want to get a deal, check eBay.
Honestly, though, or Swappa, maybe if they do that sort of thing, who knows?
Yeah,
I don't think they do those devices yet.
Dang.
So yeah, the market is definitely there, and. So yeah, that was Cyberpunk. Again, can't overstate how this was such a big, prominent moment for Stadia. And in the grand scheme, yesterday's outage was nothing. It was, 2-3 hours at most?
Midday.
In the
United States.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it was about 2 hours. I mean, hey, that's nothing compared to some of the outages that PlayStation Network and Xbox have had. So
I guess
it's really not that bad. Yeah.
I wonder how what Stadia's base is and whether there will be a spike on Christmas. I'm curious
I mean,
how that spike
it reminds me of last year. it reminds me of last year when they were like marketing Stadia as this Christmas friendly gift.
Yes, yes, I remember
that. Or holiday friendly gift. Where it really, really wasn't. Just like, it's funny to see Luna, which is in an even worse position, presenting itself as a holiday gift. Like, how are you going to give someone Luna? You can't even pay to get in. But this year, yeah, Stadia makes a lot of sense. There's no way to get somebody like a gift card to buy games.
It is crazy they have not done game gifting yet. That would be such a good way to get people to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that is Cyberpunk's big moment, Stadia's big moment. But there are even more moments this week at which Google query lining things up for the holiday season. Ubisoft Plus.
So, Ubisoft Plus is just like a very well-timed move, both on Ubisoft's part and Google Stadia's part, just because it's delivering on a lot of promises that Google and Ubisoft had made. And it's delivering a lot of games to the Stadia community, regardless of whether or not they invest in Ubisoft Plus. Like, the existence of Ubisoft Plus is great for the Stadia library in a general sense. Like, people just look at it as, oh, Assassin's Creed, Watch Dogs, Far Cry. But there's a lot of niche games that are popping up in that. Like, I don't think Stadia would have ever gotten Uno and Family Feud and Monopoly if Ubisoft Plus wasn't on the radar of things happening.
Yeah, you're probably right. Mm.
Yeah, that's very true. And how much is it, Ubisoft Plus?
For now.
How do you get it?
It's $15 a month for the time being.
Yeah, for now is the keyword there. I didn't even notice that ahead of time, but yeah, 15 for now.
The implication that it's going up? Well, or yeah.
Perhaps, maybe they'll offer different tiers, like a tier that has just Stadia or just PC, maybe?
That would make sense, because if you're like, the thing about Ubisoft Plus is, if you're playing it on a PC, you get 100 games. It's like 130 games that range from what they literally just launched in Immortals all the way back to games from the 90s. But on Stadia, you get less than 20. I think the additions from the other day brought it up to 18. So $15 a month is really not worth 18 games. Unless they're like, it's worth it for a period of time, but that would not be a subscription you would keep forever.
It just depends on how much you play Ubisoft games and how quickly you beat things. Like, if you can beat a game in a month, then, you know, subscribe to Ubisoft Plus for a month, you know, $15, and get, you know, play through Assassin's Creed Valhalla in a month, which, best of luck to you even trying to do that. But, you know, I could see the value there for the right person.
Yeah, I mean, like for me, I'm probably, once I catch up on all the other games I'm trying to finish right now, I plan on doing Ubisoft Plus for like a month or two so I can play Immortals, but I'm not going to keep it after that because I have no interest in the rest of what's in there. I'll just buy the little ones that I want. Like, I bought Uno and Monopoly, and I don't plan on buying anything else that's in their catalog because they don't really interest me. I don't know. It's just, it's a very specific subscription, and I know, it's all to say I like the way Stadia is handling it because you can still buy the games.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the best part, is that it's offering choice. And even if it's not the right choice for you, if Ubisoft Plus is not the right choice for you, the library of games that Ubisoft Plus is bringing is right for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, like, that the timing thing makes sense too, again, with the holiday season, that you can subscribe and go after you've done what you want to do. So yeah, big plus. And lastly, coming today is the fact that you can play Stadia on iOS via a progressive web app in Safari. This is the solution that others are pursuing, Microsoft most notably, with Xbox, of course. And now it is ready for Google. Just basic requirements that you need are iOS 14.3 to deal with an iOS an audio issue. But other than that, as of right now, as of when you're going to hear this podcast, it is available for all iOS users.
I'm going to give you all, you listeners, a hot take, a preview of a hot take that's going up soon.
Mm-hmm.
That hot take is Stadia for iOS is better than Stadia for Android.
Of course, it's a hardware thing.
It shouldn't be that way, yeah. But it absolutely is. Like, I had zero issues playing games from my wife's iPad. None whatsoever.
Oh, experience wise.
But what was the difference? Like, is it
no latency, no glitchiness, no artifacting, no, oh, I got in a weird spot and the Wi-Fi acted up. It was just, there was one issue that popped up, which was an iOS pop-up happened when it wanted access to my microphone, and that bugged something with the UI. But the gameplay was flawless in a way that I haven't experienced in a long time on Stadia.
I can't say I've run into any issues playing on my Fold, but that's great.
Yeah, but it definitely makes sense that, like, in terms of pure hardware, there is, like, the iPad, for example, 120Hz screen, that fast refresh rate, the OLED panel. On that front, it does make sense why everything excels from, like, an end-to-end experience standpoint. And maybe they're doing something better with their connectivity stack to... That could explain why you don't have any Wi-Fi issues on iOS.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. When last time I did a network test through the Google Wi-Fi app, I think it did say that, like, the iPad was the fastest device on the network, so that could make a significant difference. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm. And to do a brief correction, it is the iPad is LCD, not OLED. I was thinking of a rumor that OLED/micro LED is coming, but thinking of something else entirely. So, yeah. But yeah, iOS brings a whole new... How much does it expand the user base, do you think? Because...
Vastly.
Everybody has a computer. Everybody has a PC. And getting a Chromecast is not necessarily... a big investment.
I mean,
does it expand the user base, or does it specifically expand where an existing user base can play?
No, I think it expands the user base.
Absolutely, yeah. Because they're... Go ahead.
Honestly, at this point in time, not everyone does have a computer. Most people do now because, like, COVID, but even before that, there are plenty of people who did not have a laptop. They just ran off an iPad or their phone. And in the US, most people are running iPads and iPhones. So it's a huge expansion. It's a really big deal. It's a shame that they had to do it as a web app because of Apple's restrictions, and that they had to delay it this long because of that. But hey, it's a big deal. I think it's going to make a huge expansion.
Not to mention one of the key arguments for why Stadia and cloud gaming in general should exist is portability. And that portability argument wasn't there for iOS users until now. Because, I mean, yeah, you could play it on your MacBook, but you can play other games on your MacBook too. You can play other games on your TV too. But the portability of taking a AAA onto your phone or tablet, that argument wasn't there until today.
And I would also expand that argument in portability. Also, most people aren't going out right now, but something as bringing your screen to another room to make sure you're not disturbing other people or people that have, like, a computer room and don't want to disturb others there. That's another aspect of portability that Stadia is helping on iOS is helping achieve. So yeah, it's not an app. It's a web app. I'm wondering how much of a barrier that imposes to like adoption. If it were actually just an app in the App Store, whether that just that one step barrier is imposing enough to like cut out a fraction of people that would otherwise try it.
I think it's just a matter of introducing those people to it when they install the main iOS app. If they teach them that, oh, hey, if you go to the web app, there's more.
Well, there's the question of, are they allowed to do that? Because Apple has restrictions with that kind of stuff. But I think the main thing is the web app is just, it's still a foreign concept to a lot of users, especially iOS users. So I think that's the roadblock. But it's also a really good thing because it also means they don't have to use any storage on the device.
True.
Yeah, that's true. And the Stadia app is more sizable than not in terms of the megabytes on iOS, at least.
Yeah. But benefits and consequences of Flutter.
Benefits and consequences, indeed. So yeah, iOS, it's here. I'm sure we can be talking about a Stadia's 2020 retrospective in a few weeks' time, but they did the big things this year. YouTube streaming, which is improving.
Yes, that's potentially a really big deal. It's just a matter of it's a matter of how much they push it.
Yeah. And YouTube, you can think of YouTube streaming as a feature for streamers, but I think the way Google really wants to capitalize it is attracting people to it. It's getting them to see that anybody can do this. And of course, then there's in terms of how it invites other people to become streamers and that whole chain of events. But it's as much as a feature for people that want to stream online and build a community, etc., but also as a really significant advertising tactic.
Absolutely.
So yeah. And before we leave This Week in Streaming, Amazon Luna, they had a bit of an announcement yesterday.
Yeah, so Luna, when it first launched, was iOS only, which was really weird at the time because no one was on iOS with cloud gaming. And they said that Android was coming later. As of last night, the 14th, the 15th, it is live on Android. It is a web app, just like the iOS one. Which feels kind of clunky to me because it doesn't look right on Android, but that's besides the point. But it is restricted to a handful of Pixels, OnePlus, and Samsung devices. But hey, it's nice that it's finally on Android.
Yeah, that's, I guess it's maybe Amazon prioritizing iOS at the beginning. I don't know. But yeah, that's that tidbit of Amazon and increasing competition for everybody. For the next topic, a wee bit of a sad note. The Home Max has been officially discontinued after going out of stock. What was it? Yes, on Monday. It went out of stock on Monday, and Google officially communicated that it's discontinued. So the fine. Just to recap its pricing life, started out at $399, super expensive, especially even when the HomePod came out at $349 shortly afterwards.
I think so.
Then dropped to $299 for a long stretch, for the longest stretch. Before this holiday season, it went to $149 for that Black Friday week, and it spent its last days in the Google store at $179. Ben, you have one for quite a while now, and still, is it still with the Nest Audio and the Nest Hub Max in mind? Is it still the best speaker, the loudest, whatever speaker Google has ever released?
Oh, definitely, it is the best one still by a long shot. Like, the Nest Hub Max is good, but it's not nearly as loud or as crisp, and the Nest audio does not have the same depth to its audio. I haven't tried them in a pair. I'm sure that gets closer, but I think just physically it can't match what the Home Max could do, especially on the lows. But yeah, the Home Max was a great speaker. I really hope they follow it up and just price it right out of the gate. You know, if they release it again and say it's either that $179 or that $199 or even a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
Just something that can physically do the better audio would be good, because they still do need something to sit in that HomePod area.
Yeah, the premium audio range. And I think they would find quite a bit of success if they really amped up the, like, to making such a premium speaker as part of their TV home entertainment system, home setup, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is rumored for the Nest Audio. But
didn't Google confirm interesting. It?
Yeah, they basically confirmed it. Basically, there's this line of the Google Store makes mention of it, and it by all looks it was supposed to launch on launch night in September 30th, but they pulled it at the last second, and it's still in development, but there's no timeline right now when it's coming. But that would allow you to take two Nest Audios and make it the default speakers for your Chromecast, Google TV. That is an interesting setup. I think if the whole Max was somehow to slot in there, it would necessarily have to be more expensive than two Nest Audios.
Yeah, I mean, $249 would be a good spot.
Yeah, $249.
I'm intrigued to see what happens with this big thing, because for each recent release, the Nest Mini over the Home Mini, the Nest Audio over the Google Home, it's been leaps and bounds better than the previous generation, and yet the Home Max is still standing strong as this wow, that's a great speaker experience. So I can't. And yet it's very clear that they've been learning so very much since then. So I can't even imagine what they're going to bring to such a Nest Audio Max or Nest Max or whatever crazy name they give it. I can't imagine how much better it could be.
I mean, realistically, it doesn't need to be that much better because the Home Max was already so good. They need a speaker that physically large to accomplish that audio quality.
And I think another component that plays an aspect is the quality. And the whole Max was, I'm sure Google's well aware, it was never going to be a mass market thing. They could choose better components in that they didn't need to make so many, in that they didn't need to get the cost down so much. So I think they have all the experience, all the components within the Home Max. So I'm wondering whether it's a questioning of whether they think they need something at the high end, or whether they would also at the same time decide to do a new form factor.
I mean, not having something at the high end would be a friendly move in the realm of letting Sonos exist. And that's a whole can of worms.
Yeah, I'm doing it. Yeah, that lawsuit's going on.
Even then, isn't Sonos One only $199?
Exactly.
Yeah, they get.
So the Home Max was $100 over that.
Yeah, I think the Sonos 5 basically looks like a Home Max or something like that. They have something that looks like it, and I'm not sure about the cost, but it's probably up there. But yeah, so yeah, that's the Home Max, and in similar,
that one is $500.
That is $500. Jesus. And it's been there for a few years.
The Home Max can totally exist at like $249 and not ruffle feathers and just be a good option. They just need to redo it.
With better AI chips inside, probably, so that the assistant can work faster. Sure. And that's probably all they really need to do.
Make it the first one with the UWB stuff like the HomePod. That'd be great.
And maybe not have it require it has, what, 9 microphones or something? That's a crazy amount of microphones, isn't it? to just pick up people over the loud voice.
It does not have that.
It has a lot of, I'm pretty sure it has a lot of microphones.
I thought all assistant speakers only had like two.
This definitely has more. Let's see how many it has. I'm pretty sure.
It has six.
It had like six. Okay, six, not nine.
Six is still a lot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has six. Yeah.
So yeah, the Google Home Max, farewell. Hopefully we see you another reincarnation. Oh, actually, to go back just a second, Kyle, then you had an interesting thought about how things would be named going forward. I believe you thought that the Nest Mini should be renamed.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be the
to have
Nest
audio fit in.
Yep, because every single Nest device needs to explain what it is in the name. So just like they renamed the Google Home Hub to the Google Nest Hub, I feel like they need to rename the Nest Mini to the Nest Audio Mini, have the Nest Audio in the center and the Nest Audio Max. It's going to happen. Google I.O., made by Google 21. One of those. It's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. It's a shame, though.
What would be what would be a first-party Google speaker without having two names?
Exactly.
That is very true. Yeah, that's undeniable. But at the same time, Nest Mini is such a good name. It's such a good name. And
it doesn't explain what it does. You know, you got the Nest Hello, you got the Nest Cam.
Absolutely, that's true. But I know, it's such a good name, and it's a shame.
I mean, in a bubble, right? You ask somebody who's not that familiar with this what a Nest Mini is, they might think of Nest the thermostat and think that it's a small thermostat.
That's true. That's very true.
That's very true, but I don't know. I think they accidental their way into something, an iconic naming scheme with the Nest Mini. But yeah, we'll see what happens in the future. You're probably right, Kyle. It's going to get a rename one of these days. So yeah, next up this is an interesting week for operating systems, actually. Starting with the freshest news of the day, Google and Qualcomm this morning, the way I see it is they laid the groundwork for all Android phones to get so the Qualcomm Snapdragon chips starting with the 888 will get in its total life support four versions of Android, the one it launched with and three more releases after that. So that's basically the Pixel model right now. That's what Google promises for its Pixel phones moving forward. But the thing that Qualcomm is also doing is it's adding an extra year of updates, of security updates, exactly. And case of, let's say, the Pixel 2 as a hypothetical example, if it were under this program, like back in September, it would get the last, it would get Android 11, but it would continue getting updates for the next year. It would until Android 12 comes out. So it would be, and presumably the key point there, I think, is that over that year, I would assume that Google wants to keep, but the Pixel team anyways, wants to keep doing Pixel feature drops throughout. So yeah, in that sense, it's a big deal. Maybe less so for Google and Samsung and even Microsoft with its Surface Duo, and Samsung with what it announced in August, I believe, at the Unpacked event. But yeah, basically, hopefully it brings everybody else along, like the Motorola's of the world and the OnePlus into, now that it's technically feasible, now that Qualcomm is letting people do 4 years of updates, including security patches, hopefully other people will pick up the ball.
Yeah, it just opens the door to things getting better, because updates are an issue, mostly in just terms of in terms of its lasting a while. The, you know, Pixels and Samsungs and OnePluses, Well, honestly, just the Pixels and the Samsungs get, you know, they get their 3 years, and then, which, actually, you know what? Samsung's already doing 4 years with quarterly, so I wonder what this does for them. Either way, it makes everything last a little bit longer, which is nice, and hopefully it'll encourage OnePlus to do better.
I think we're past that point with OnePlus, though.
Probably, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing to put out at the end of the year. It's a Project Treble. It's an extension of Project Treble and what they've been doing since around Oreo.
So I actually have a thought on that. Do you guys remember when Android Oreo came out and that Project Treble was a requirement to launching devices with Android Oreo? So there was this window where makers were not making devices with Oreo. They were releasing with Nougat and quickly updating to Oreo.
Yeah, that's not familiar.
So I feel like that could happen again here because this whole new program... So it's only happening for devices that are on this Qualcomm 888 generation and launching with Android 11. So I feel like OEMs could get away with not using this by not launching with Android 11.
That would be sneaky.
It would be, but it feels unlikely because, all right, let's think what's launching with the 888. Samsung will be... Maybe I think Xiaomi is going to be the first, but Samsung will be right behind them. And based on last year, Samsung will be launching with Android 11. And I think we've actually heard that from leaks. And Xiaomi will be launching with Android 11. Because typically they do launch with the latest. OnePlus definitely will. I mean, I'm trying to think of who... Would
Motorola, maybe Nokia.
No, Nokia wouldn't. They usually do
Nokia is
on
pretty good
version.
With one.
Okay,
they at least launch on the latest. They usually are a little delayed later, but they do launch with the latest.
LG, if HTC is still a thing,
LG was up to date last year too. HTC is not a thing. yeah, LG was up to date last year. Motorola, I'm pretty sure, was up to date last year. And also, they're not going to be launching anything with an 888 for a while. So, I guess that's possible. But I think at this point, anything that's launching with an 888 is going to be on 11.
I hope you're right. I really do.
I think the reason that it happened last time was just the timing.
Yeah, that's fair. That would make sense. So, yeah, that's Android. Then we have, from last week, we have... a fuchsia thing happened, an official fuchsia news event. So Kyle, take it away.
So last week, and I didn't get to talk about it last week, and I was so disappointed because I was out in the middle of a forest. I couldn't talk about the fact that fuchsia had an actual public real announcement where real people who put their name on a blog post talked about fuchsia existing, being a real project, not something happening in a strange back room. Real project to make a real operating system. It's good. It's a very good thing to see that this project that Google and Googlers have been working on for forever actually becoming a real existing thing, not something that is whispered about and questioned about at Google I/O. Anyway, to the point. Officially, as of last week, Google is developing an operating system that is meant to be, quote, general purpose and open source, which means it can run on a variety of devices, kind of like Linux can run on almost anything. Like half the devices that you mess with on a normal day are Linux-based one way or another. Android, stuff like that. And not only are they developing it, they are opening the process of developing it to the public in a way that it hadn't been before. So like the bug tracker to get an idea of what they're developing next is public. The roadmap to, again, know what they're developing next, the goals that they have for the operating system is now public. And they're opening the process to public contribution. So if you wanted to, if you're an interested developer and you wanted to help with this future operating system, now you can. There's a process for that. You can become a member of the Fuchsia project. And it's mind blowing to me.
So I guess the hot question, what's next, is
what's next is probably a beta, if I had to guess, honestly. I mean, not a beta, like an alpha or something that I feel like that's too far. What's next is a way to develop apps for Fuchsia. That's what's next. Because they've done a lot of things to make developing for Fuchsia, developing like the operating system itself easier, but they haven't done enough yet to make making apps easier. They've done this thing where I forget the official name for it, but it's like it's this whole kit that's good for, that's very low level and is good for making a software development kit, which you would then use to make apps. But they haven't, there's not that middle ground that you need yet. They don't have the software development kit like Android has that you can just download this and make apps. I feel like that's the next step.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's definitely, that would make sense as the next thing. And I guess further down the road is something vaguely hardware related. But I guess we're definitely not there yet. And would it be fair to still call it early days?
I would say no. Because, I mean, yes, but no. To the extent that in Googler's eyes, or in the Google corporate eyes, Fuchsia, with this announcement, Fuchsia shipped, quote unquote. So that's a pretty big deal. But even then, like it has it actually shipped? No, because it's not like in our hands. But that does seem to be the goal, though. Like another juicy quote here was, what was that? They're developing Fuchsia with product in mind, which I think is interesting. Very interesting. That
very interesting.
We could have a Fuchsia product in the future, but we don't know what that would look like at this point in time, because we don't know what Google is wanting to do with it.
Yeah, so I guess in them making this announcement last week, people in the know, in the community, Android, Chrome, whatever, they have heard of Fuchsia. I guess what this blog post announcement helps them do is, if it ever comes up at I/O, at the developer conference or whatever, a similar event, it wouldn't be a big surprise to people. Such a developer event would definitely be a catalyst for people get learning more and taking part in Fuchsia. But I think it gives them the stage to make more big announcements without it being perceived as like this is the first time we're hearing about it. So that's a promising piece of development.
Absolutely. You raise a good point there, which is that Google I/O is probably the real what's next for Fuchsia. I would keep your eyes tuned to May.
Or whatever happens in 2021. So right, the very last thing today. Right. So yeah, the very last thing today is a quiet bit of news that came out Monday afternoon. sorry, the timing is weird. A piece of news that came out on Monday afternoon and that we covered yesterday. But Cloud Ready is this OS, is this Chromium-based OS made by a company called Neverware that turns old PCs into Chromebooks, into Chrome OS devices. We're thinking about very old PCs here, and Macs that may no longer be getting updates from Microsoft and Apple respectively, but that they could still run this Chromium-based OS, which is light, cloud-based, and what performs well regardless of what device you're running it on. And Google is acquiring Neverware, and with plans to make Chrome OS, cloud-ready OS, the names are actually already so familiar, an official Chrome OS offering. So there are no hard details yet, but down the line, it's what seems to be happening is that Google is going to make a way to turn every PC into a Chromebook, into something running Chrome OS. And again, how they market this is going to be super interesting. If they keep it onto older hardware, sure, that is a fantastic from an e-waste opportunity in terms of having computers run longer. But the really crazy thing would be if they, I don't know, they let you buy a Mac, if you can take a brand new MacBook Air and install Chrome OS on it.
That's going to be a lot trickier just because of the M1 chips. But last year, you made that argument. I would 100% agree with you.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe a Surface. Can you imagine the Surface? The Surface Pro X is also running ARM. But if you take a Surface Pro laptop and put Chrome OS on it, that would be one heck of a premium hardware example for Chrome OS. Actually, this reminds me of going back to the Windows 8 days. Chrome, once upon a time, they had this full screen experience where they basically took over Windows. Does anybody remember that?
Oh, that does sound vaguely familiar.
Yeah, that happened a long time ago.
Not ringing any bells.
And basically, it was based on, I don't know, how at the time Windows RT apps and the full Windows 8 experience was a long time ago. But they basically were able to take over the Windows experience in Windows 8 if you wanted to. They eventually killed it because maybe not too many people were using it or whatever. But I don't know. What's really interesting about what happens with CloudReady is what if they take it into premium hardware? What if they offer a conversion route for every single computer out today? That would be very bold.
I mean, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. That seems to be the goal.
Yeah, that seems to be the goal. If we're being more realistic, we're being safer with our guesses. It's probably just for a helping schools convert their old computers into Chrome OS and having it managed by Google services. That by itself is a really good business for Google to be in. But it's, again, what else they could do with it? What's next is the most promising.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely where Google is trying.
But I feel like Chromebooks, don't people use CloudReady to extend the life of their Chromebooks? Like, once they hit end of life, don't some people install CloudReady because it will keep going past the date?
Yeah, I do remember them saying that back when, you know, it was a popular story that, you know, everyone realized, oh, these only have a few years of updates. And then they came out and said, hey, you can just install CloudReady. Yeah, I do remember them saying that. I don't know how popular it was, but it's definitely something you can do. And it's a great way to extend the life of a Chromebook.
Yeah. So if that becomes a more official thing, if CloudReady is no longer this unofficial operating system, it might be good for the longevity of Chromebooks in general. Like, it might push them into the 10-12 year category rather than 8.
Yeah, I do wonder if Google would just let you, like, when your Chromebook goes to end of life, just switch to that version.
But then the question becomes, what are the downsides of that? And that's what we need to learn.
Yeah, that's the question. I have genuinely no idea.
Yeah. So officially, more news is coming in the weeks and months. I'm sure by next year we'll have a clearer picture about cloud, what he wants to do. But again, this is like a very low-key move by Google, a low-key acquisition. But really, it's a big... The potential is... It's up there.
Absolutely. I was so excited to see it. Really was.
So yeah, thank you everyone for joining us on for this week of Alphabet Scoop. We normally record every Thursday and publish the audio the next morning. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, and you can, of course, listen at 9to5google.com if you wish. Thank you for tuning in, and thanks to Ben and Kyle for joining me. Until next time.
So long. Bye.
Bye.